This is America Weekend. I am Paul Harris. That's Edwin Starr, of course, of the classic War. My next guest did not want to go to war. In fact, didn't think the United States should be at war in the 1960s when we were in Vietnam, in a war that we eventually had to end by bringing our men home and seeing a country that we were trying to keep separate as North and South turn into one unified country, where, by the way, we now have normal relations between that country and ours today. His name is Bruce Dantzis. He became famous in 1965 as the first student at Cornell University to defy the draft by tearing up his draft card, and soon became a leader of the draft resistance movement, a movement that ended up moving him eventually to a federal prison. He writes about all this in a brand new book called Resister, a story of protest in prison during the Vietnam War. Bruce, welcome to America Weekend.
Thanks for inviting me.
1965 is fairly early in the war. Why were you so virulently against it at that time?
Well, I turned against it. 65 was when President Johnson began the bombing of North Vietnam and started to escalate the number of American troops, you know, sent to South Vietnam to prop up the South Vietnamese government, military dictatorship. I felt when I turned... I actually tore up my draft card in 1966 after I turned 18. I was a college student already, and I refused to accept a student deferment, which I thought were unfair to young men who didn't have the means to go to college or the, you know, the financial ability to do that. And I felt I could no longer cooperate with a system that was, you know, that was sending people to fight in a war I considered illegal and unjust.
What was the punishment?
Well, I was given a strange sentence. The maximum sentence for tearing up your draft card was 5 years in jail, but I was given something called the Youth Corrections Act because I was only, when I was prosecuted, I was 19. I had an indeterminate sentence of 0 to 6 years. But I ended up spending 19 years in federal prison. It seemed there was an unofficial federal prison policy to keep draft resistors in for 18 to 20 months, and I guess I fit into that profile.
Did you say 19 years or 19 months?
19 months.
19 months.
19 months.
Okay. Yeah. And what was that like? What were, I mean, I have no idea what the prison environment is like now, but I can't imagine what it was in 1966 or 67 when you went in there.
Yeah, I actually, with appeals, waiting for the Supreme Court to decide of whether it was the law making it illegal to tear up your draft card or burn your draft card, that wasn't decided till 69. That's when I began my sentence. But I was in a prison in Ashland, Kentucky, quite a bit away from where I lived in New York. It was a prison for younger guys, mostly men under 25. It was probably a lot easier than other prisons. It certainly wasn't a country club. It was a medium security prison with gun towers and barbed wire, but a lot of guys in for bank robbery, mail theft, car theft, drugs, things like that. Not very many draft resistors. So we tended to be short timers, as we called it, you know, people doing 5-year, 10-year sentences rather than lifers. So I'd say it was the kind of place where there are fights all the time, but I don't remember anybody getting killed when I was there.
How many men were sent to prison for resisting the draft?
It's surprisingly few. I think there were actually the studies I've seen that while there might have been 100,000 men for various reasons broke the law, I think only around 2,000 went to prison, and among those, some were not really there for political reasons, like I was. You know, Jehovah's Witnesses went to prison out of religious principles, but not because of their opposition to the war. So my guess is that the number of political draft resistors who refused induction or destroyed their draft card numbered no more than 1,000.
A lot of men went to Canada or even to Mexico to avoid having to go into the military, and then in the late 1970s, President Jimmy Carter essentially said, it's okay, come on home. And there were even welcome home concerts that were not just for the men who evaded the draft, but even for the men who did go to Vietnam because a decade had gone by, or at least a half a decade in some cases, and attitudes changed.
Sure.
Has your record been expunged?
Yes, it has. Part of my sentence was that when I was finally off parole, which is I spent 2 years on parole after getting out of prison, my conviction was wiped out. So I'm able to vote.
What do Vietnam War veterans say to you now?
Well, it's a different response. I mean, you can't ever forget that there was a tremendous amount of dissent within the armed forces during the Vietnam days. And by 1970 and 1971, the leading edge of the anti-war movement were Vietnam veterans. I mean, anyone who was around at that time remembers the dramatic action in Washington, D.C., when Vietnam veterans were throwing away their medals to protest the war in Vietnam.
Yep.
I think there has been a reconciliation of type, at least among the people I know. I can't speak for everyone. I'm sure there are people who don't like what we did. But I think many Viets understand that our motivation was to end the war and stop the killing. So to stop the, you know, bring our boys home so no more were killed and stop the killing of Vietnamese.
Do you feel you accomplished that?
I think we were part of many, one of many factors that contributed to the end of the war. I think the public, by 1966, had turned against the war. After the Tet Offensive in 1968, that became really widespread. Eventually, Congress defunded, you know, support for the South Vietnamese military dictatorship. I think there are a number of factors. I mean, the Vietnamese, the North Vietnamese, the National Liberation Front were fierce fighters on the battlefield. I think that we did have an effect on moving the country against the war. We probably constrained the ability of the Johnson and Nixon administrations to use nuclear weapons in North Vietnam. I know that was discussed at one time. After the war, the memoirs of people who were in those two administrations talked quite often about how the anti-war movement prevented them from doing some of the things they wanted. And to me, that was all for the good. I think we did reduce the amount of bloodshed. I wish we had been more effective. You know, it was very frustrating working against the war and not seeming to have an effect, at least that we could notice. But with hindsight, I think we were an effective movement.
I heard you laugh a little bit in the introduction when I mentioned that we now have normalized relations with Vietnam. The irony does not escape you?
No, it doesn't escape me at all. I mean, just like after World War II, we quickly became, you know, the very good friends of Germany and Japan. I mean, times changed, you know, things go on. It doesn't surprise me at all.
Yeah, that domino theory never really worked up to more than one domino, did it?
Right. Well, there are so many. Our government was so deceitful in telling us why they were in Vietnam. They said it was to preserve democracy in South Vietnam, but there was no democracy in South Vietnam, and there never was.
Have you gone to Vietnam, Bruce?
Excuse me.
Have you gone to visit Vietnam?
No, I never have. Maybe someday.
I have friends who are Vietnam vets who have gone back and say, you know, it's a beautiful country. I didn't realize it at the time, but I wish I'd gotten to see more of it under peaceful circumstances.
Yeah, I understand that very, very much. Yeah, maybe one day I'll go.
Since you were a draft resister, I have to ask about movements during the Iraq and Afghanistan years, the last 13 and plus, where some people have said, you know what, if we had a draft now, we probably wouldn't be in this war. What do you say?
Well, I think there's certainly some truth to that. There's no doubt that when President Nixon introduced the draft lottery, which took a lot of young men sort of out of circulation, out of worrying about being drafted, the anti-war ranks were reduced somewhat. But there are other factors. The war had been going on for so long. People got frustrated. They turned to other means of protest. So there's probably some truth to that. And I think if the government did learn anything from Vietnam is that you cannot use conscription to build an armed forces, you know, to fight an unpopular war.
I'm also curious about Cornell University, which my brother, by the way, graduated from long after you were there.
Okay.
Why was it such a hotbed of anti-war and draft resistance?
Your guess is as good as mine. I mean, draft resistance was all over the country. Maybe it was just the coming together of a couple of individuals like myself who sort of moved things along. Cornell is very isolated. It's sort of in the middle of nowhere in central upstate New York, so there's no obvious reason. I guess it had a tradition of activism in the civil rights movement, and maybe we just carried on that tradition without knowing our ancestors there.
Here we are more than four decades later. You still feel like going to prison was the right choice?
I think it was the right choice for me. Clearly, it wasn't for everybody who was against the war, you know. But at the time, I just felt that cooperating with a system that seemed unjust and unfair to support a war that I hated seemed like the right thing to do.
Never thought of going to Canada?
No, never, never.
The book is called Resister, A Story of Protest and Prison During the Vietnam War. Lots more that we didn't touch on here today, including Bruce's involvement in the SDS and much more, including the FBI's infiltration of that group. He writes about it all in here. Bruce Dantzis, thanks so much for joining me here today.
Thanks for having me.
I'm Paul Harris. This show's called America Weekend. We're on the air every Saturday and Sunday from the Envision Networks.
America Weekend.